One of our core values is decisiveness. If you come back in 2 or 3 weeks, you're going to pay this amount of money for it. But we work best with decisive people. If this is something you want to move forward on, we believe our first engagement with somebody should be less than $500.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Craig Andrews. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Craig. One, he has driven over, wait for it, $500 million in revenue. Gee, I'd like a piece of that. Two, he helps business build irresistible first-time offers that accelerate high-ticket sales. And three, his wife had the chance to pull the plug and did not. That's why he's still here. Craig Andrews, welcome to Your Intended Message.
George, it's such a delight to be here. I've been looking forward to this. Thank you for having me.
Delighted to be talking with you today. And I know our listeners are curious already. Your wife had the opportunity to pull the plug, but didn't. Tell us what's behind that.
Not only that, the doctors actually had her meeting with hospice for her to plan the day she was going to pull the plug. And so what happened, August 10th, 2021, I walked into the emergency room, walked up to the desk and said, I'm having trouble breathing. And they immediately brought me back, put me on oxygen. I had COVID. It was the Delta variant. And 11 days later, they shot me up full of morphine, which I still don't understand because that sort of represses respiration. And then they called my wife a few hours later and said, we need to put him on the ventilator. And they told her from that night that I would die. That was going to be the outcome because this was the Delta variant. If you went on the ventilator with Delta, you died. That's what happened. And miraculously, I was the first one that left that ICU alive. But it was lights out for me for about 6 weeks. And my wife, just being wonderful, she told the doctors, she said, well, I'm going to come visit them. And they said, oh, no, you can't. You know, this is COVID. And she said, oh, no, you don't understand. I am coming to visit him. And she prevailed. And so they gave her an hour a day. She came into me 1 hour a day and she sang to me and she prayed over me and she said words of encouragement. And something miraculous happened. You know, one, obviously, I didn't die despite expert opinion. But the other thing is, 6 weeks later, when I woke up, my trust in the doctors had completely plummeted. It had fallen through the floor. My trust in my wife had gone through the roof significantly. And all of this happened while it was lights out for me. And, you know, the best I can reckon that is it reminds me of a Maya Angelou quote that people will forget what you said, they will forget what you did, but they will never forget how you made them feel. And while the doctors thought I couldn't hear them, they said things around me they probably shouldn't have. And while my wife was uncertain or not, she spoke words of life to me. And I've actually repeated back to her, word for word, things she'd said to me when I was in the coma.
Wow. And despite what you went through, or maybe because you did go all the way through, you are a lucky man.
Very much so. Very blessed to have the wife I do.
Oh, you bet. Sounds like it. She's a keeper. Don't let her go. Craig, I'm intrigued by this concept of a first-time offer to get big-ticket sales. When you say big-ticket, you're talking thousands of dollars, I'm guessing.
Yeah, typically. And you know, big-ticket, George, is always in the eye of the person writing the check. And that's the important thing to remember. To you, it may feel small, but it's really about whoever's writing the check. If they feel it's big ticket, it is big ticket. It's like Duke Ellington said, if it sounds good, it is good. And so, but typically, yeah, it's certainly four figures, five, six, even seven figures. Often it's B2B, but it doesn't have to be. Sometimes it's B2C. And the key thing is, and especially, I mean, if you think about what's going on in the economy right now, you know, I don't know what to believe. I hear the economists talk, but what I do know, what I do believe is I see a lot of people that are scared. They're conserving resources. They're afraid to spend money. And what happens when you're starting to move into a higher ticket item, they just slow down that process. And it ties to some cognitive biases that are wired in our head that help us, that basically stop us in our tracks from making irreversible decisions. And so that's kind of the barrier that you have to overcome with the high ticket sales, especially now. And it's hard. It's hard because those cognitive biases are powerful.
So what's the way of getting past that fear?
Yeah. So think about it from the perspective of courtship. You know, so we often think about five stages of courtship. You have an introduction and then you have conversation. If conversation goes well, you don't jump to marriage. You know, you jump to coffee. You go out on a coffee date. And if you think about how we structure coffee dates in like dating relationships, usually you drive there separately. You know, you don't know each other. Presumably, neither of you, or at least she doesn't want to be stuck in the car with a complete stranger. Maybe doesn't want you to know where she lives, all those things. And what the ladies tell me is they'll have a girlfriend call in about 15 to 20 minutes into the date to see if they need a rescue. And so what happens there is you're just taking the risk out. You're taking the commitment risk out. You're taking the financial risk. You're taking the security risk out. And so if we think about a coffee date for business, that's what we call an irresistible first-time offer. And you take the commitment risk out. You take the financial risk out. And you put together an offer that if you dangle it in front of a qualified prospect, their only answer could be yes. Now, let me give you a couple examples that at least one I'm pretty sure your listeners are familiar with. So way back when, the first time when people were collecting albums, apparently that's back now. The first time, there was a business called Columbia House Records that ran a special. You buy 13 albums for one penny. You give us one penny, we will give you 13 albums. So if you're the type of person that wants to build a record collection, that's an irresistible offer. Of course, yes, 13 albums. That gets me 13 albums down the road, gets me closer to my goal, and it's only going to cost me a penny. Now, obviously, Columbia House Records, because they understood the lifetime value of their customer in their record club, made tons of money off those people. So that would be a simple offer. And that works, at least back then, worked pretty well for albums. But when you're starting to get a little higher ticket, the complexity of the offer has to match the complexity of whatever it is you're selling as your core offer. And so here's an example, and this isn't one that we did, but it's one that I think probably anybody listening can relate to. There was probably 30 years ago, there was this dumpy old hotel at the end of the Vegas Strip, and a guy named Bob Stupak bought it, and he renamed it Bob Stupak's Vegas World. And he ran a promo for it, and he said, give me $396 of your money, and I will give you 3 days and two nights in one of my deluxe suites. When you arrive, there will be a bottle of champagne waiting for you. And as long as you're on the property, you pay nothing for your drinks, whether you're gambling or not. Even if you're sitting in one of our entertainment venues, you pay nothing more for your drinks. Not only that, but for your $396, I will give you $600 of chips to use in my casino. So right there, we have an offer that has four parts. You know, the room was a discounted rate, bottle of champagne, that's the second component. Free drinks was the third, and $600 of chips was the fourth. And so if you're the type of person that likes to drink and gamble, that's a really hard offer to turn down. You know, unless you just, you know, wanted to be at the Bellagio for whatever reason, you know, he couldn't overcome that. But if you just wanted to go to Vegas to drink and play and gamble, it was an irresistible offer. What's really interesting, and the more I've thought about that, it's not an offer that would attract me because I'll drink a little bit, but not hundreds of dollars worth, unless they bring me some really nice wine, but they probably don't for that price. And I don't gamble. It's not my thing. As I thought about it, Stupak only had so many rooms in that hotel. His profit was maximized when he had drinking gamblers staying in those rooms. So he didn't want me in his hotel. He wanted to rent that room to somebody who was going to drink and gamble. And so his offer attracted his ideal customer, but also repelled somebody like me that was not going to be his most profitable customer. And I think that's genius.
And I'm turning that over in my mind right now. And I agree with you. Yes, because too many of us are trying to attract the wrong people.
Yeah. Well, just this morning, I got an email from somebody. We had a conversation on Friday. He needed help with marketing. And it's kind of funny. During the course of the conversation, I was thinking, I don't know if this is a good fit for me. And we make a first-time offer, which is, and we can go into the details of what that is. But it's a stupidly cheap offer that if you put it in front of a qualified prospect, they say yes. And I had debated on the call even making the offer to him because I just didn't think we were a match. But the reason I did it was he came from a referral. And when somebody refers business my way, I always try to make them look like a genius. And one of the ways I do that is I sell them a first-time offer to their referral because if he had said yes, he'd walk away with a $5,000 marketing plan for about $500. And that makes my referral source look smart. I got an email from him saying, you know, I don't think you're the right agency for us to carry us forward. I got that email and I texted my wife and I was like, he said no. And I was so happy. And she texted back. She's like, oh, it works. The process works. Because I had talked to her about him and, you know, he's somebody who I don't want to give too many details should he or my referrer listen, but he's somebody who has demonstrated high intellect. Let's just say that. And sometimes those are the hardest people to teach. They're just not very teachable. And which makes my job harder, makes them less pleasant to work with. Now, I'm not going to go into his area of expertise and tell him how to do his job. That would be stupid. But sometimes I found some of these high intellect people are very confident coming into my area of specialty and telling us, well, you should really do it this way. And I'm like, okay, well, why don't you go do that? You know, I don't think we're adding any value. But it's even better when we don't have to have that conversation and our offer rejects people who are not our ideal fits.
Craig, give us a better idea of what this offer, first-time offer, looks like. How does one package it? And how do you package it in particular to attract the right people?
Yeah, no, George, that's going to be really hard for me to kind of wrap it around because you really have to understand who, it takes deep insight. It's hard for me to give a generic answer to a lot of different people. Let me try it this way. Let me give you the kind of the basic structure. I'll walk you through an example of one of our offers, and hopefully that will reveal that. So the critical elements is it has to be an impulse purchase. That means the coins in the cushion in the couch, money in the wallet, or the B2B equivalent of that. Another way of looking at that is if whoever you're making that offer to has to ask anybody for permission, you've priced it too high. And so like B2B, and this is going to cause George, some of your listeners to kind of stammer a bit. For B2B, we usually target less than $500. And the reason is anybody with any decision authority in an organization can spend $500 and nobody will ever track them down to see how they spent that money. So that's the first thing. The second thing is it has to deliver disproportionate value to price. So I mentioned this a couple minutes ago. We put together what you would reasonably pay $5,000 for a marketing plan. And we pack that into a $500 package. You know, we're not cutting corners. It's a good plan. So disproportionate value to price has to solve a problem. And because if it doesn't solve a problem, it's not delivering value. And one caution I would throw out, an audit or an assessment, while that can be in there, that's not solving a problem. That's just highlighting the problems that are there. But you don't want to solve all of their problems because they won't advance and purchase your core offer. So you want to leave problems unsolved. And you want to naturally lead to the next step. And we found that these things work best when they have a minimum of 3 and a maximum of 5 deliverables. So if we go back to Bob Stupak's example, that had 4 deliverables. You know, the hotel room, bottle of champagne, free drinks, and $600 in chips. We found also that if one of the deliverables is the product of a co-working session where your customer primarily contributes to the deliverable for that deliverable. That works really well. It triggers a couple cognitive biases called the IKEA effect and the endowment effect. But the other thing is, when they get to the end, for them to not move forward would require that they reject their own ideas. And the final deliverable, and this is going to sound complicated, I promise I will immediately simplify it. The final deliverable has to be the solution to a problem that's uniquely created by the successful delivery of the preceding deliverables. Okay, that's complicated. Let me give you an example that will simplify it. If you buy a boat, you have a new problem. Now you need a place to store your boat, to dock your boat. And so if I were selling boats, when somebody walked into my boat yard, I would tell them, I'd say, we will help you find the perfect boat just for you. But not only that, once you have the boat, you're going to have a new problem. You're going to need to know where to dock it. Well, guess what? We have relationships with all the marinas in the area, all the yacht clubs in the area. We know their prices. We will find the perfect one for you. We will make the introduction. As a matter of fact, if you want, we will have the boat delivered there. So all you have to do is grab your family, grab your picnic basket, and grab your cooler, get on the boat, and go. Now, what I just did was I shifted their mindset from debating buying a boat to actually being on the boat. I have moved them forward to a success mindset. And once they start picturing themselves on the boat with happy family, with their cooler, with their picnic basket, it's going to be very hard not to sell them a boat.
Let's apply that to a service provider. Mm-hmm. Let's pick a financial planner. Financial planner. How can they use that method?
No, that's a great question. So first thing we want to do is we want to understand the customer. So with high net worth investors, there are 9 personas of high net worth investors. The number one persona representing 34% of the market is the family steward. Their primary goal for investing is to create a financial legacy for their kids and grandkids. The number two persona is the independent. Their primary goal in investing is to be able to walk into work one day and tell the boss to shove it. And much different goals. And so this comes back to, and out of the 9, guess what? There are 2 or 3 that you work really well with if you're a financial advisor. And there are 2 or 3 of the 9 that you should never work with. Never. And so this is actually, thank you, George, thank you so much for pulling this example, because this will help make the point of how to repel those that are not a perfect fit. If I were putting together a first-time offer for a financial advisor, I would focus on things like the hidden little gotchas in the tax laws and financial planning that when you think you have things in order, you may not. So the pain that I'm addressing is the fear that they may not be able to achieve their primary motivation for passing on to kids or grandkids. There are other things that crop up, such as, the kids inherit the money and they squander it and it only lasts one generation. Another fear is that the inheritance comes out and you thought you had evenly distributed things, but because of the nature of the tax treatment of the different assets, you find out that one sibling got a heavy portion and a different sibling got a lighter portion. And then another fear that family stewards would have is that their kids and grandkids would squabble over the money once they passed. And so if I'm structuring a first-time offer, those are the things I'm going to be looking at addressing to make sure that that's handled in the first-time offer. And if I present that to a family steward and we hit on anything that they haven't considered, they will, and typically B2C, we try to structure a little bit less. Often these family stewards, very wealthy people, you could probably go a little bit higher. Let's say you go as high as $500. For them to be able to have that question answered is worth way more than $500. So it's not, that price isn't even a decision item. I mean, so I wouldn't go over 500. I may even go less on that. So that's how it pulls in. If you're somebody that works well with family stewards, that pulls in a family steward. Let's say you have somebody, one of the personas is a gambler. The gambler just invests for the thrill of it. They love it and they are high maintenance. You got, typically they take about 48 touches a year to keep happy because they wouldn't call you every week to tell you about the latest crazy idea that they want to invest in. And they want you to be impressed with them when they call in. So if I present that first time offer for Family Steward to a gambler, they're going to be like, that's not me. I have no interest in any of that because it's not speaking to them. Similarly, if I created a, let's say I worked well with gamblers, the gambler being the persona, not necessarily somebody in the World Poker Championship, but just somebody who invests for the thrill of it and is maybe occasionally a little reckless. But if I created a first-time offer that stimulated them, that appealed to them, and I put that in front of a First Family Steward, they're going to look at it and say, I have no interest in that. They're going to turn around and walk away.
Craig, if you're giving so much value for, say, the $500, why not just do it for free?
George, such a good question. I get that a lot. And let me take you back to an experiment that a fellow named Dan Ariely ran. And Dan Ariely is a behavioral economist. He studies how he's probably one of the best in the country for certain, in North America, certainly in the English-speaking world, even though he's actually Israeli. He did a study where they put out a table, and on the table they had a stack of Lindor truffles that they were selling for 15 cents and a stack of Hershey Kisses that they were selling for 1 penny. And he found that when people were given that choice, 72 or 73%, I always forget that number, 72 or 73% chose the Lindor truffle. Then he said, I'm going to reduce the price exactly 1 penny. And so the Lindor truffle was 14 cents, while the Hershey Kiss was free. And what happened was it flipped. All of a sudden, 69% of people picked the Hershey Kiss when those were the choices. And so a lot of people say, Craig, look at the results of that experiment. What that proves is free is powerful. Free will move hordes of people, which is 100% true. That is a valid conclusion from that experiment. But it's not the only conclusion. If your business is selling chocolate, your ability to provide for your family and for yourself is based on how much chocolate you're going to sell. Who do you think you're more likely to sell chocolate to? The 69% who said when you offered them something for free, they said yes. Or the 31% who saw unique value in that Lindor truffle and said, I would rather pay you 14 cents so I can have that thing of value rather than have a lesser chocolate for free. And so it's a sorting mechanism where immediately you pull out those because, I don't know how it is for the folks in your audience, at least in my world. I have a lot of competitors that offer things for free. And if that's what's going to move somebody, I'd rather them tie up my competitors' time. Mm-hmm. And I used to do free. I mean, I didn't wake up and say, I wasn't born this way doing these first time offers. I got here because everything else I tried failed. And I had bad clients and miserable sales results and all that. And it was when I charged a little bit and then packed this value in, that all of a sudden I started finding the most valuable customers for me.
So I'm looking at a consultant who might be tempted to offer a small project or so much time for free versus charging a minimal amount. And what I'm hearing you're saying is that if it's free, you might get a lot of takers who are only taking because it's free.
Yeah. Well, and let's think about your intended message. What's the message you want to send? I'm so desperate, I'll do this work for free. Now, there's another issue you have to deal with when you do it heavily discounted. We found there are three things that if you put in place, nobody will ever look at you as being cheap or low value or desperate. And the most obvious one is you have to have a plausible reason for why you're doing this one thing for you know, for a heavily discounted rate. And I'll tell you the one we use too. One, we work best with decisive people. And that's a lot of my personality. If you want to put me in a torture chamber, lock me in a room with somebody that can't make a decision. I will go nuts. At some point, the cops will probably be called. There may be a felony conviction that comes out of it. It's a bad scene for me. And so I don't want to work with people that are indecisive. And so the first thing we say is, you know, one of our core values is decisiveness. We tell them, if you come back in 2 or 3 weeks, you're going to pay this amount of money for it. But we work best with decisive people. If this is something you want to move forward on, we'll discount to this. Also, because we believe our first engagement with somebody should be less than $500. That's not a secret. That's on our website. We actually say it on our website. And what's really interesting, I told you about the example somebody I was talking to on Friday. And I made the offer. And he was like, here's the fascinating thing. He said, you know, I need to talk to somebody else about this. I'm like, oh, well, when we got on the phone, I thought you were the dude in charge. And now what you're telling me is you need someone else's approval to spend $500. So you're not as in charge as I thought you were. You're also not decisive. And so again, when I got the email this morning saying he wasn't going to move forward, I was like, yay, that's great. I don't think we'd be good together. Seems like a good fella. I mean, the person who referred him speaks very highly of him. I'm sure he's a quality individual. I just don't think we'd do quality work together.
Is there a danger of, so let's say that you offer for this introductory offer for $500 and they take it, they take you up on that and you perform the work and then they say they want more. However, they say, well, wait a minute, I thought your rate is around $500. Why you now want $5,000?
Yeah, so one, we've never had that issue, but it's a very fair question. And maybe the reason we never had that issue is we got lucky in the way we presented it. I don't think I was initially intentional, but when I stepped back and looked at it, there are three components that determine that. The first is what you're offering has to be high value. And I've actually had prospects coming through that when they hear us asking the questions we're asking, they realize, oh, these guys aren't some Mickey Mouse firm. These guys are serious players that know what they're doing. And they actually said, had people say partway before we even got to the offer, say, I don't think we're in the same price range. I hadn't even said anything about price. They just took that from, they realized what we did. They realized the value of it and they knew it was not cheap. So that's the first thing is whatever you're selling has to be high value and they have to know it's high value. The second thing is you have to set expectations on what the market value is if they don't already know that. And so that's why I say, if you come back in 2 or 3 weeks, this is what this price will be. So we're telling them, this is the value of what we're doing. So that's also setting expectations. That's putting them in the ballpark of what we would normally charge for our work. And then the third thing that I mentioned a couple minutes ago is a plausible reason for why it's heavily discounted this time. And the plausible reason can depend upon different things. I would not recommend you ever use, oh, because we're not hitting our sales numbers this month, we're offering a special. That's, please don't do that. No, 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 that makes you look cheap and desperate. And that's never going to get you to the high ticket thing. As a matter of fact, we found when you use this model, you're no longer competing on price. Once somebody comes into your world on a first time offer, remember my Maya Angelou quote, how my wife made me feel versus how the doctors made me feel. When you come shoulder to shoulder with somebody and help them solve a problem, they trust you. It just builds amazing amounts of trust in a short period of time. At that point, you're the insider. Somebody else coming around offering a low price looks dangerous. You look safe. The outsider looks dangerous. And so you don't even have to come in. I mean, you have to be in the ballpark, just like any other industry. You have to be kind of in the ballpark. But, you know, let's say you're selling a luxury vehicle. That's, and, you know, I don't know what current prices are. I was about to say about $50,000. I think that's now a Toyota Corolla. But, you know, the difference between somebody buying a car for $50,000 or $55,000, it's not about the price. It's about the car. It's what they believe they're getting. Now, if it's $50,000 versus $70,000, yeah. Now you're talking price. So you can be, as long as you're in the ballpark, we found that you can even charge higher rates. And since we put this in place, our rates have been steadily going up. And people have been happy to pay them because we build trust, we solve problems, and we help them achieve their goals.
Mm. Craig, I understand you have two free gifts for the audience. Please tell us what that is.
Thank you, George. So yes, this first-time offer, very hard to put together. It looks simple. It's harder than it looks. I know because I fumbled around for 18 months, screwing it up. My first-time offer, nobody understood it. Nobody wanted it. Nobody bought it. And so I've put together a guide to help you avoid some of the mistakes that I made. So that's the first gift. We also have a self-paced course, and you get 23 days access to that course. The reason we limit it to 23 days, I've signed up for free courses, just like probably everybody else here. And to this day, I haven't gone and taken them. And I'm sure they're valuable. I want this to change your life. I'm committed to changing the way high ticket sales are done. And I know if I put that 23-day limit on it, that it improves the probability that you'll come in and you'll do it. I see it in the analytics. It works. I want it to change your life as much as it's changed mine. So the way you get that is you go to our website, which is alliesforme.com. That's spelled A-L-L-I-E-S, the number 4, M-E.com. And then at the end, you just put / your intended message. Sorry, I was about to give the wrong URL. Your intended message, all one word, all lowercase. And that will take you right there. And I hope you put it to work because it has been one of the most valuable things I've done in my business. Not only has it changed my business, it really did. It changed my marriage. It took a lot of stress out of the marriage. And so I want others to, I want to have as big of an impact on them as it has for me. So I hope you go sign up for this. It's powerful.
And you can find that link in the description below. That's the guide to create your first-time offer and a 23-day access to the course. And both of them are free. And it's in the link below. Craig, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with a business leader who's never had this kind of concept before, if you could sit down with a business leader to encourage them to explore this, if you could give them one, two, or three pieces of advice that would get them on the right foot with the use of the first-time offer, what might be that one, two, or three pieces of advice?
Yeah, the first thing would be figure out the lifetime value of a customer. This thing only works if you have, and you don't have to have it precise, but you need a ballpark idea. If you don't know the lifetime value of your customer, you don't know how much latitude you have to do this. Most people, I found many people don't know that. But once they start thinking about it, they realize how much latitude they have, how much money they have to go acquire a new customer. So that would be the first thing. The second thing, and this is going to be hard because if you have a business, you're hardwired to sell what you sell, is to get a first-time offer working, you have to get out of sales mode and get into serving mode. You have to use it as a tool to serve people. And the third is when you build an effective first-time offer, you're going to have family, friends, colleagues, strangers on the street come up and tell you, "You're giving away too much. No, 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 no. You need to charge more." That's the sign you're in the ballpark. If you have people telling you that you're giving away the farm, you're not charging enough, you know you're in the ballpark of having an effective first-time offer.
Mm. My guest today is Craig Andrews, reminding you that you start the relationship with a first-time offer that has incredible value.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.